Snack Bar Games Podcast. And welcome to Snack Bar Games Podcast, episode 222. I'm Graham, and I'm here this episode with Andrew, Sean, Jerry, and Jeff joining us this week. He's a new writer, mostly focusing on PC, but he's actually going to talk Vita with us today. Hey, Jeff.
Hey.
So how's it going, guys?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
I'm Rayman.
Yep. That's about...
I am working...
You
until
are
like 4 a.m.
Yeah, glad you could join us for the podcast. Jerry, you're about 3 months late on that, but we're just happy you showed up to the party at all.
Hey, you should be more glad that I actually supported it at a higher price than just jumping at $20.
This is true. Rayman Origins is to be experienced.
Indeed. Didn't Sean just purchase it as well?
Yeah, I'm actually writing the review for that, but I haven't touched it yet.
Oh.
To be fair, it's just that I originally played the demo for Rayman Origins on PS3, and it didn't really click with me at all. And I played the demo on the Vita, and it's actually the first few levels of the game, and
right.
That's a demo. So I actually ended up liking the game a lot more from that demo than I did originally.
And we will start, as we always do, with some news. Jerry, you got news this time. What is going on?
Well, first off, we have XSEED actually taking the localization of Last Story, which is a surprise, seeing how Nintendo's not actually going to do that.
Yeah, so this was interesting in the Nintendo Direct conference. The big news was that they are not directly localizing The Last Story. That felt a little strange that they can call it Nintendo Direct. And it's like, and their big news, those guys over there have some big news.
Yeah.
Great. But you know what? I'm happy to see The Last Story get a US release, and XSEED, I know they're going to do a great job with it. I hope this is the start of something, you know, a regular relationship, because I know that if Nintendo tried to release The Last Story, it would not be a success. It would have to be a wildly popular thing to meet Nintendo's threshold for a successful product. Mm-hmm. And if they can give it to XSEED, the worst case scenario for Nintendo is probably still pretty profitable for XSEED.
Exactly.
And not only that, but this partnership, I really hope it continues, because if Nintendo can make these announcements through these channels that are not, like, you know, major advertising to, you know, everyone in the mainstream, but these little, you know, these little streams that are just for core fans, if when they do things like this, they can announce these games, that builds up their goodwill, you know, with gamers. They're like, yeah, okay, you're letting us get The Last Story. And then that's good for XSEED, because Nintendo announcing your product is probably a lot more effective than XSEED announcing your product.
Yeah, exactly.
So I hope that works out. But Andrew, you are you have played through Xenoblade.
I have.
And you are taking on Last Story.
Yep, about like, I don't know, when is this coming out in the US? They didn't say, like, fall, maybe? Or summer?
Summer, I believe.
Summer? Okay, yeah. So I will be playing it a few months early, like with Xenoblade. But see, yeah. this announcement happened about 3 or 4 days after my limited edition shipped. So I was like, oh, well, I guess I'll get to play it early anyway.
Yeah, you know, still envious.
You have Nintendo Europe localizing Last Story. That means that XSEED's localization might actually be different.
Yeah, that is interesting. What is being said is that it is a separate localization. I don't think that's the case with Xenoblade Chronicles.
No, it's not.
But I guess while it will be charming to have a European localization of one of them. Maybe, you know, every RPG going forward having European localization would be a bit weird. I am interested to know who Xseed is going to put on this. If it's going to be their standard crew of, you know, the kind of voice actors that pick up all the Japanese products.
I'm sure people won't complain if European voice acting is what it'll take for us to actually get Nintendo games.
Oh no, absolutely, and I don't mind it so much. In a way, European voice acting is superior to the kind of voice actors that the small localizing outfits can put out. You know, as much as I love games from like Atlas and Nipponichi, and you know that the voice acting is not the best part of that game.
Usually, yeah.
In a way, I wouldn't mind if they kept the Japanese voices and just did subtitles for everything. I'd probably be happier.
I wouldn't be surprised if that option is just available, though.
Xenoblade.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But you know, yeah. But Andrew, since you've been looking into them so much, what is it about The Last Story that is interesting for people who may not know too much about it?
Well, first of all, it's being developed by Mistwalker and Hironobu Sakaguchi, the creator of Final Fantasy, which is what got me interested in the first place. It's just like, hey, Sakaguchi's making a new game. All right, I want to buy that.
Is this not the Blue Dragon team?
No, Mistwalker is the Blue Dragon team. They made Blue Dragon, and they did Lost Odyssey. Lost Odyssey was great.
Okay.
Whether or not you liked Blue Dragon, Lost Odyssey was great.
Yeah.
Now they're working on The Last Story. It's the same team. It's not a huge team. It's not like teams that Square Enix has and stuff like that. But you know, they've been working on this game for quite a while, I think. Or I think they've been working on it since Lost Odyssey came out, or shortly afterwards. So why they chose the Wii, I have no idea, but you know, hey, they got a publishing deal with Nintendo, at least in Japan, and then in Europe, so that's something at least. And I don't know, it seems like it has a really intriguing battle system. If you asked me to try to explain what it is, I couldn't until I actually play it. But it seems different, and I don't know, it's intriguing.
Yeah. Alright, well, we will definitely talk about that when it gets close to release. Uh-huh. And let's go ahead and move on to news item number two. Jerry, what else is news?
Well, next up we have more information on Assassin's Creed 3.
Right. So what kind of information do we have on that?
We have the game being set during the American Revolution. Rather than scaling over historical buildings, we're going to actually live through a historical event.
Great.
And the character is Native American.
Half Native American.
Half Native American.
And half, I guess, Italian, or I don't...
I would assume so.
Sure. Whatever. Why not? Whatever Ezio is, it's half, well, half something
he's,
like that.
He's just half Ezio and half Native American.
Right.
Yeah, anyway.
Sure.
I'm really excited about this because, you know, the Assassin's Creed series is becoming a bit stagnant. I liked Brotherhood a lot. Revelations was good, but lacking. And
yeah.
It seems like the step in terms of the mechanics are going to change, probably because of the different setting, the different character, and also just in terms of the setting itself, it's just wildly different from anything we've experienced in an Assassin's Creed game. So,
really any game. We haven't gotten... There are games about the American Revolution, but most of them are by Paradox or Koei or yeah. We haven't had like an actual AAA title. And while I really like the idea of a game set in the American Revolution, and I'd probably be more likely to play it than the rest of the Assassin's Creed series, I feel like there's some reaction to this that feels very similar to the announcement of Mass Effect 3, and that there was this, like, much like Mass Effect 3 was like, oh, there's this whole galaxy, save the galaxy, and then save the galaxy again, and then, though we're getting more information about Mass Effect 3 now, and certainly, you know, as it releases, we'll know all of that, that a lot of the marketing was, save Earth, finally, yeah. You know, we were saving Earth while we were saving Earth and everything else, right? But this one, you know, having that kind of interesting other cultures thing, and then America, yeah, it's a little weird. Yeah. It's like, yeah, even bigger than the world is America.
But at least it's still based in history, and I mean, it's not like they made it just. I mean, a lot of the speculation was this was just going to be Assassin's Creed 3 starring Desmond, and it's just going to be all modern day, right. Which I think would be interesting too. But I mean, I think one of the things that drew me to this franchise in the first place was the fact that it was steeped in this rich history. And although this is probably history that more of us Americans are used to and know more about, it's still going to be interesting to see it from a different perspective. So yeah. I'm excited. I'm glad that they're not returning to something even, you know, remotely similar to what we've seen. They're jumping way ahead, and you know, they're calling this Assassin's Creed 3. They know they want to step it up, and they want to evolve the franchise at least in some way. Right. So I'm excited.
Okay.
To be honest, I saw the cover for the game, the Game Informer cover. Yes. And I thought the new guy with the Assassin's Hood wearing American colors was kind of dumb. So I kind of hope there's an alternate outfit for that.
I'm sure if it's like the other games, you'll be able to just customize your all red or all black assassin person.
But this time he's holding a tomahawk. That's different.
Yeah.
Instead of
hidden blade to the face, it's tomahawk to the face. It's even better.
Maybe.
I saw a picture of the cover, and it shows him wearing the. I don't know if it was a cover or was one of the things that got one of the art pieces that got released, and it showed him with his white assassin's uniform, mm-hmm. and it just looked a bit out of place among all of the Revolutionary War soldiers.
Coats. That is going to be a tough line to walk. Probably in the game they'll get to be a little different there, but I understand with the cover they do want to at least have it be similar enough to say, oh, this is the next Assassin's Creed game, so let's have a guy who looks a little bit like the previous, you know, protagonists in there.
Yeah.
I hope that they actually show off enough to convince me to pay money for the series, but I was part of the group that initially saw the American Revolution thing and went by the same train of thought or going to this foreign location to one that's suddenly America. But the concepts themselves I do like, so I hope that they show off some more enticing stuff to get me into it.
It makes me wonder if they're going to – because Assassin's Creed has kind of always been about tall, extravagant buildings and climbing them and killing people from great heights and, you know – America during this time didn't really have many tall buildings, so I wonder if it's going to ditch stealth, maybe not altogether, but kind of forfeit some of the stealth mechanics for, you know, flat out action stuff. And it'll be interesting to see how they handle that.
Yeah, but let's do one more news item and move on. Jerry, give us one more.
Last one for the day would be Jet Grind Radio coming its way to PSN and XBLA.
Yeah, so, you know, there was that Dreamcast is coming back announcement they had about, 2 years ago now? Mm-hmm. Where they're like, yeah, we're going to release more Dreamcast games, starting with these four, and then we got those four.
Yep.
So it's nice to see that there's at least a few more coming down the pipe, Jet Grind Radio.
And they picked one of the best ones.
Plus, it looks like there's actually going to be... it's not just going to be a port, since they're actually adding stuff to the game.
Well, that would be nice. It's one of those things where I think this is probably the only opportunity they're going to have to revisit that series. As much as people like it, it's probably not a great proposition to have another big retail title or anything. Mm-hmm. So if they want to add, you know, a couple bonuses, make this the definitive edition of the game, then I'm happy to see it.
Would be the first time I played.
Alright. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about games. We are saving the Vita discussion for later, but let's talk about some of the console releases. Andrew, we'll start with you.
Ah, yes. I have actually just finished, a little while before we started this podcast, Asura's Asura's Wrath. I used to always call it Asura's Wrath, but it's Asura's Wrath. I need to pronounce it correctly now because they say the character's name about 500 times throughout the game, so I figured I should actually pronounce the title of the game correctly.
Seems fair. So now I've seen some of that game,
mm-hmm.
and it seems to me to take all the interactivity of Dragon's Lair and then put like the really bad implementation of recent Dragon Ball Z fighting game combat in the middle. Is that what this is?
Let me start by saying a lot of people were disappointed when they played the demo of the game and were like, man, I was expecting more of a game out of this and, you know, yada yada. But I was one of the people who knew what it was going to be ahead of time. So I played the demo. I was like, oh, this is really cool. You know, right. I like games that take different approaches. And I mean, I knew there was going to be some action, like straight up action elements in there, not just all quick time events. But the fact that there is more gameplay, straight up gameplay to this game than I expected is disappointing. And I never thought I would say that. I never in a million years thought I would ever say that about a game, but this game's combat is just atrocious. It is tedious. Sometimes it barely works. When it does work, it's not very fun. Because there are a lot of situations where you're just thrown into these battles with these just standard, regular old enemies. And sometimes they're bigger enemies and you gotta hit them more, but it's not fun. It's just not fun. And basically when you're in combat, you're trying to build up this thing called the burst meter. And then when you do, it triggers the cutscene, which leads to the quick time event, et cetera, which will lead to the next either battle or series of cutscenes. So it felt like filler. It felt like they had this great 4 to 5 hour, you know, story, epic story design. And then they're like, oh, we should probably make this a little longer. So let's throw in another hour or two of these really tedious battles and kind of stretch this concept thin.
Yeah. It feels like they didn't commit to the concept that they had, which I think happens a lot with games that are experimental like that.
Yeah.
Like I know, for example, Heavy Rain seems like the thing to bring up now where just randomly for some reason you had to do fist fights in that game. Like, you know, there was that interesting, look around, do things thing, but then it's like, punch this guy. Why am I punching this guy right now? Why am I mad at him?
But to be fair, the actual combat mechanics in a game like Heavy Rain, you know, they were true to the mechanics of the game and the system.
Right.
This game, like the combat sections rather in this game are taking something like, I don't know, off the top of my head, Bayonetta or Devil May Cry, and it's still super crazy, but you don't feel as in control of it. And when you do, it's just kind of like you're basically pressing one button for most of it, and then you press this other button sometimes, but it doesn't, it's just not, you don't feel as connected to the action. And yeah, that stuff is disappointing, but I still really enjoyed this game despite that, because of the interactive cutscenes. They're just outrageous. They're ridiculous. They're, I was into those because every button press, even if I wasn't directly controlling it, and even if I failed, the thing still went on. I still felt like, yeah, I'm punching this dude in the face and he's flying halfway across the planet and I am happy about it. And it's great. And those sections are kind of what I expected the entire game to be. And then there are boss fights, which are, you know, a lot of them start with the regular combat, but the boss fights actually have strategy to them. It's not just, oh, there's these generic enemies you've fought about 5 times now. Just, you know, mash the B button a little more and win. But these guys actually pose a threat. And while they don't really improve the combat, they're intertwined with those amazing interactive cutscenes more than the regular lame-o fights are. And they just they feel like they're on a bigger scale. And that's where the game shines. And there's a lot of that. But when you're taken out of that, it's just, it's such a letdown because you just want to get back to that. You want to get back to punching someone so hard he explodes, or I don't know, killing someone with no arms, you know, crazy things like that. You don't see enough of that.
Wait, I mean, are you saying that the person you're killing has no arms? No, killing without arms?
There are at least two sections in this game where you have no arms.
So, are there any sections when you have no arms and the person you're killing also has no arms?
Nope. No, I'm sorry to disappoint. Nope. You know that seems like a possibility, but no, I didn't forget.
Do you have legs when you have no arms?
You have legs.
Okay.
You almost always have legs.
Is it that you actually have no arms, or is it just that your arms are tied up, or you just have no arms?
Your arms are destroyed many times. There are times
when you get them back.
Eventually, yes.
How does that work?
Well,
is Sora a starfish?
that would be a crazy plot twist. Maybe there's a super secret ending I didn't discover. But no, it's the explanation for who he is and who these other, they're basically like deities, but they're kind of mechanical.
What?
Like when Asura doesn't have his arms, you'll see like sparks flying out of the spots where his arms used to be.
What?
So, but it's never really explained what they are. They're just kind of like all powerful beings that just came out of nowhere one day and started, you know, being all powerful, you know, and, but it's fun. You're cool with it. You're like, I don't care. I'm taking this guy down.
Sure. Yeah. Great.
Now I have six arms and it's cool too. You know what? Whatever.
That seems like too many arms.
There is a point where you have more than six arms. I'm not going to say how many arms.
That's also too many arms.
But there are lots of arms, and there are literally hundreds of button prompts on the screen at once. But you just press one button to activate them all. But it feels like you're controlling arms. It's crazy. This game is ridiculous.
Okay.
If you had notes, it's kind of a weird game.
All right. Okay. I think we have a pretty good sense of what that game is.
Do you really?
No. Let's talk about a game that's really similar. And Jeff, you reviewed Crusader Kings 2 for us. That's like the closest game I can think of to this.
Oh.
So tell us about that one.
Oh, most definitely. You can't get any closer to Robot Gods with 15 arms.
Explain Crusader Kings 2 to someone who wants to kind of attempt to get into this but can't. Because he realizes he will have no chance of actually making sense of any of it, as best as you can.
That's actually quite difficult.
Yeah, okay. Then just explain Crusader Kings 2 as you would to, I don't know, anyone. What is this game?
Well, basically it's a sort of half real-time, half turn-based strategy game. And it's part of a series of games released by Paradox that have you playing out certain periods of history based on choosing your nation or your king or whoever.
Yeah, that is definitely...
But
Paradox is interesting in that way, and that they have a lot of these games where it's not necessarily about global conquest or, you know, their goals are strange. It's more about having a simulation of the era than it is about... you know, a game of domination.
Yeah, you can't actually. There's no way to win the game. It just goes, and you basically just have to do as well as you can. So generally, it's aimed at someone who's more interested in playing out history and just playing strategy games than any sort of aim for a predetermined victory.
I was going to say, it seems like something that people who love board games would like.
Yeah, essentially, it's a very complicated version of Risk.
Yeah, that's fair. So, basically, the game is that you just choose someone to control in what is basically historically recreated, you know, 11th century Europe. And so you can choose any king or duke or count. Can you play as a count?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically you can just choose someone, and then everyone in the game has, you know, motivations and family ties and things like that. And so you can't just attack anyone. You can only attack places you have a claim to by virtue of various things. You know, it takes into account, you know, family ties and your own, you know, history and religion and things like that. But it's this weird thing where you just kind of manage what you can do, and you can play as a count, and basically you're just in charge of your own little area, and maybe you can move up. Or, you know, if you're the king, you have to manage all of your dukes and, you know, all of your subjects. Basically, you got to keep all these people happy because you're just one dude in the 11th century and you can't rule over everything because you're just one guy and you would basically get revolted on. It's an interesting dynamic. Jeff, you played a lot more. I played a little bit of the game, but yeah, it's intimidating.
Yeah, like the real 11th century, there's a whole lot of backstabbing and plotting going along.
Yeah.
Generally, the way to lose the game is for your character to die with no heirs. So one of the more important aspects of it is making sure that you have a wife and you produce kids that will inherit your titles when you die, because time does pass and eventually every character will end up dying from random events or just time.
And that's interesting, because it's not one of those things where when you die, your heir takes over everything you have. That, like, basically your lands are split just as they would be at the time. If you have multiple kids and maybe, you know, some of them get some of your property and some of them get others, you can only choose to play as one of these. And that part I think is really interesting. You know, and that all these people, though, as time goes on, since you can change the course of human events, not everything's exactly historically accurate, but they start out that way, and then all these figures have motivations and locations based on historical events, and they link you to the Wikipedia page, and it's one of those things where it's much like looking at historical figures in Wikipedia. This is how this game feels. It's an interactive way of basically just going down the rabbit hole of micromanagement and craziness.
So
you pick who you start as and the year that you start, and at that point it will generally follow history. But as soon as you move on from that, random events can happen and it will branch off, and anything can happen, and no two games are the same.
So basically you're saying that this game is, going back to the Wikipedia example, it's you looking at a Wikipedia page of a historical event and be like, nothing happened that way, and just editing it and changing it to whatever you want.
I would compare it to the experience of looking at a Wiki page of a historical event and then being like, oh wait, what was this? And then clicking that and then reading that page and then clicking a link there, and then 12 hours have passed and you just spent your whole day on Wikipedia.
This is the game version of that. This is Wikipedia the game, is what you're saying.
Kind of. Except
more focused.
Yes, it's very specifically about, like, Middle Ages Europe.
It's just both the best and worst comparison for any game. This game's like Wikipedia.
Yep.
Yeah, Paradox has created their own little subgenre of strategy where their games are generally designed for the people who have played the previous games. So it's generally fairly hard for a beginner to try and break into that without just playing and making mistakes and figuring it out that way.
Yeah, I really want to try this game, even if assuming my PC could run it. I really want to try this game, but I'm very intimidated by it, because I get the feeling by the time I actually start learning things, I'll be like, oh, well, here's this other game I'm going to start playing. But if you have the time to devote to it, it seems like a pretty good experience.
Yeah, it's definitely not one for short attention spans. Of course, then Paradox put out Magicka, which doesn't make any sense at all with the rest of their games, but I love them for it. Anyway.
Magicka, which is not like editing Wikipedia.
No. Okay. All right, guys, let's move on and talk about the Vita. And now we all have a Vita, and we've been playing it for a couple weeks now. So we have some impressions of the system and the games on it. I'd like to start out by talking just kind of about the system now that you've had it You know, you've had it in your hands, you've had it around for a while. What are your impressions with the system? What are your thoughts on that?
As the quote unquote resident handheld hater, I guess.
Right.
I am actually pretty impressed with this system. It fixes pretty much all of the problems I had with the PSP. A lot of which dealt with it only having one analog stick, and that analog stick not even being a stick. So there's that, and
sure.
The fact that they completely just UMDs. I hated UMDs. UMDs were terrible.
I don't think you need to make that argument.
Nope. Unless you really like watching Van Helsing on your PSP, I guess.
You can still watch Van Helsing. You just got to have the digital copy of Van Helsing.
True.
Yeah. You're covered. Anyway.
Okay, good. All right. Yeah. I don't have to sell it now. I can.
Right.
Okay.
I'm sure it's on Netflix.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I can watch Van Helsing wherever I want.
Right.
I gotta go, guys. I got a thing to do.
All right.
But no, seriously, I'm just really impressed, because a lot of handheld, for me, comfort is one of the biggest things when it comes to playing video games. I want to be comfortable when I'm playing games, and with handhelds, a lot of the times I actually don't get to play them on the go, because when I'm on the go, I don't have enough time to play games. If I lived in New York and I had a long commute, you know, a long bus ride someplace, New York City rather, I do live in New York, then I guess having a handheld would make more sense. But
right.
Most of my gaming happens at home. Pretty much all my gaming happens at home or at a friend's house. So I have to try to find a way to make myself comfortable playing a handheld. And the Vita is one of the first where I actually felt like I could play this for a few hours and still not have to worry about, you know, neck cramps or my arms getting sore for whatever reason.
Really?
So, yeah, I've been enjoying it a lot. I haven't had any major problems.
Well, I'm just surprised, because to me, I like the Vita. It's a nice piece of tech, but that's a pretty big, heavy thing.
That's the
thing. It's not uncomfortable, but after a couple hours, I'm just like, okay, let's get all right, we'll set this down.
I have a very, very specific setup. I usually have a pillow on my lap or two. Sometimes I'm in a recliner. Sometimes I'm just lying on my bed. I don't know. I haven't had many problems with it. I think the fact that it's also a much larger system. I think it's not as heavy as I thought it would be. First of all, it's not that much heavier than the PSP, from what I can remember.
I'm not sure about that.
But I don't know. Maybe it's been that long since I've used the PSP, I guess.
Probably.
But I guess this is my perspective. I haven't had any major discomforts with it, and I love the touchscreen, although the rear touchpad is kind of just there.
Yeah.
But I'll talk about a good use of that in a when we start talking about games. But generally the touchscreen itself is fine. You know, some of the touchscreen things are a little weird. But I'll let someone else talk now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's a solid system. I think there's a lot it can do. I don't think it's doing much of it yet. There's very few examples of games that are using the touchscreen right.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of gimmicky stuff going on, which is common with launch. But, I mean, generally, I think it's a pretty cool piece of tech. I don't think anyone's going to care about the back touchpad in 2 months.
Nope.
And I don't think anyone's going to want to tilt the system to do things.
Tilt is...
Just stop, everybody. Yeah. Stop.
This is how I see it. It's like Sony saw what they did with the 6-axis, and they're like, all right, how can we make this 10 times worse? Let's do that.
Well, you know, I think they just wanted to match everything the 3DS does spec by spec, and they didn't do the 3D thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, minus the 3D, but...
Yeah, but they, you know, oh, okay, so you got the front and back cameras, we'll do that, we'll do the, you know, motion sensing, well, you know, it's...
It comes with AR cards, but I never even
used it. It comes with AR cards. I tried those games out. Most of them are really dumb.
I'm completely surprised. I thought AR cards were the way of the future.
Let me say, the Nintendo AR games work a little better.
Okay.
I think they were focusing on trying to make them look cool for the Vita, and as a result, they don't... You know, it's AR for a dumb reason. Like, there's a... one of the main games that you can download is that you dive off this thing, and like it's just like hit A at this point when your diver reaches this point, and hit B at this point, and it's like, well, I guess, sorry, these circle and cross buttons. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But it's just like there's no reason that it's on an AR card. And so, then there's this soccer game that never really works, and it uses like all 7 cards all at once that you have to keep within the frame, and some of them are just to put stands behind the field. It's they clearly just, you know, got the cheapest dev teams they could to put out some examples of AR games.
That's the thing. They never even talked about it. I mean, I don't remember hearing about it.
There's a reason. They're not good. Yeah.
It just kind of like, we're going to throw this in the last 6 months.
Yeah. I was surprised when I opened it up. I was like, really? There are AR cards in this? But yeah, the biggest issue I have with the system, and I hope they fix this with some sort of system update, is that that thing goes to sleep if you sit it down for a second.
Yeah, it's you know? it's got narcolepsy.
And I'm okay with that. Especially if it's on battery, I understand. Dim the screen, turn the screen off, whatever. That's fine. But, you know, and this might just be a problem because, you know, we write about games. You know, I'm constantly sitting something down for a second to, you know, type up a little bit. But then also I'm sitting it down if I'm, you know, talking to someone online, or if I'm getting up to, you know, get something to drink or something. Like, there are a lot of things that normal people would do that would take them away for just a second. And I'm okay with it, you know, turning the screen off or something. But just, like, it goes completely to sleep. You have to, like, hold the button to get it to come back on. Then you have to, you know, swipe your finger across to peel that thing down. And just over and over again, it's a little tiring.
Yeah, doing that when you first turn on the system is like, oh, okay, sure, why not? And then having to do that every time you have to turn it on after it exits sleep mode, it's just, yeah, I get it. This thing has a touch screen. It's cool. But can we move on, please? I have a game I want to play. I mean, yeah. I know it's really stupid because it takes like a second, but it's just a little inconvenience.
But in a way, could I just hit the button and have that same thing? Like, why not?
Yeah. But at the same time, go ahead.
I know that the swipe thing is sort of in there so that if it's in your pocket or something, nothing starts triggering things or pushing.
Sure,
pushing
but
buttons,
you're having to hold down a button.
Yeah, if you
and
if
then swipe.
If it's not going to wake up on just from the touch screen alone, then there's not really much point to that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can change it to all the way up to 5 minutes. So I guess that's better than a second. Or what I think the default is a minute.
Yeah.
So basically, it feels like a second though. Cause
it does, because you just like you turn around for a second, then you come back. But wait, yeah. But there are some interesting things about the system. Especially some of the menu features and things like that. And I know, Jerry, you've been playing around a lot with some of the customization and stuff. If you could speak about that.
Well, I pretty much recustomize my Vita every week, every couple of days.
Just okay.
The things I can do on this thing, it surprised the hell out of me.
Well, like what for example... you're really happy with?
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that the Vita actually supports like transparent backgrounds, so you can have your own rendered graphics on as wallpaper, but still have the animated background in the back makes for some really cool effects.
Yeah.
but don't try putting a transparent image as the lock screen, because then the Vita just goes crazy.
Like, I'll keep that in mind.
Noted.
I don't think the transparent wallpapers were an intended feature at the moment, because that's the end result.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know, I just really like that that it's a thing I can do with my handheld and just be able to fiddle around and play with it constantly.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to be able to do stuff like that. I can imagine it gets a little addictive to keep changing it to the point where maybe you don't spend so much time even playing it.
Nope.
You're just like, yeah, I can change my background when people see me on their friends list. So like, okay, great.
It's cool though. They have
Yeah.
They have random games that you can select things from, like Wild Arms and Rogue Galaxy. It's like they didn't forget about these games. That's cool. I'm happy about that.
One guy who was in charge of making a whole bunch of little images to put behind friends list didn't forget about these games.
Yes. He's the one guy. He's the number one Rogue Galaxy and Wild Arms fan.
It did seem like someone in Sony Japan just started going through their, folder of concept art of things they own the IP to.
Or just things they've published.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, well, I made this thing 6 years ago, so let's put that in there. Yep.
It's not like we're using it for anything else.
It's true.
In terms of the menu design in general, I think one thing Sony's always struggled with the PSP and the PS3 is I think the menus have always been kind of clunky, like the cross media bar stuff has never really clicked with me. And I think what they did with the touchscreen interface and the little bubbles, it's a little weird, the bubbles, but I like them a lot. And I think I don't know. I think it's an improvement, if anything.
I think it's a different strategy. Yeah, go ahead.
The only thing I don't like about the bubbles is there's no game card channel. All of your games are installed as their own bubble, even if they're not in the system.
Right, that's gonna get tough as people's libraries get larger. But the thing to me about the interface is that the cross-media bar interface is definitely kind of an engineer-designed interface, where it just thinks, like, what is the fastest way to get to someplace if you know how to get to someplace? Which, that's nice once you get used to it. But the thing about this one is it is easier to find things because they're all presented, but it does add that extra couple of steps to get to what you want. You're going to swipe a lot, and it's mimicking that iPhone interface, but I think in a way that with those like rounded 3D icons is just a little weird.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I also think like having entirely separate menus for trophies and friends lists, and then one for the chat, and then one for the party.
Yeah,
it's a little. They could have combined it into one like extravagant thing. It's like here's your friends, here's your trophies, and then here you can have a party going on while you're playing the game.
Right.
It is cool to have cross game chat on a Sony system for once.
That is true.
And the microphone works really well. Jerry can also attest to that.
Like we actually tested the mic out on purpose with a friend that I was playing Blaze Blue, and I wasn't using a headphone or anything, so I had the volume set to the highest with the party setting, which lets you like auto optimize the audio so that it doesn't bother the people in the party chat. I had that thing off. And the other people in the party couldn't hear a thing I was doing.
Yeah.
And yet it picked up my voice just fine.
That is nice that it filters out the game audio.
Mm-hmm.
I know that technology is basically what, noise canceling headsets are based on, like hearing the outside noise and then countering it. I can imagine. I think they do a lot of that, for example, with, like Kinect and things like that, where they pick up voice and, it does seem to filter out the game audio there. But it's nice to see that in the cross game chat here. And yep, generally good thing. All right. So let's go ahead and move on before we get too far and talk about some of the games, some of the launch experiences. And we won't talk about everything, but if you kind of want to talk about, the things that you have had the most fun with.
I can start with talking about Luminous.
Well,
because
you'll be talking about Luminous.
Because Luminous is still Luminous. It is still amazing because it's Luminous. Guys, it's Luminous. It's more Luminous.
I think that's all we need to say, really. It's not if you like Luminous, you will like this Luminous. It's you like Luminous.
You really like Luminous. You want more Luminous.
If you don't know it, you do actually like Luminous.
Yeah, have you never played Luminous before? Well, too bad. You'll like it. Trust me.
You already do like it. You just have experienced that thing that you like.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know that one dream you had that was really great? Yeah, that's Luminous.
That's Luminous.
Yeah. But seriously, It's basically more Luminous, but the little things they've added are pretty nice. The soundtrack is great. I think it's the best in the series. And I think the fact that they actually have a use for the little avatar you choose at the beginning of the game is cool, because each one has kind of its own special powers that that, for example, one will change all of the next three blocks into the, like, same color blocks. So that'll let you build up multipliers, and another one will give you a block that clears a lot of blocks at once, things like that. And you can use them once, and they need to recharge, and you can actually tap the rear touchpad to do that. But the thing is,
the rear touchpad,
it's on the rear touchpad. So it's imagine you're trying to play Luminous, but you're also trying to tap the lower left corner of that at the same time. It doesn't work, but it's not necessary. You don't need to do it. But if you're really trying to go for high scores, it's kind of a pain that put that on, like, I don't know.
A button.
On one of the triggers. Like, I use the face buttons for rotating the blocks.
Right.
So make it have the option that, like, the left trigger will.
Right.
Because that's easy.
This just reminds me of. I mean, I think there hasn't been a system with these kind of gimmicks that have been unexplored since the original DS.
Yeah.
The rear touchpad stuff feels to me a lot like all that stuff in the first and, you know, sort of second generation of original DS games, where, like, you blew in, like, blew onto the screen and it got picked up by the microphone to do things.
Oh, yeah, I forgot all about
like,
that.
Like, oh, blow out these candles. That's what this feels like. Like, there's no reason, if you notice, basically no games used the microphone on that system again.
Yeah. Only Nintendogs.
Only Nintendogs.
That's the thing, though. Like, you pop in Luminous and you're like, all right, this is going to be buttons, right? Nope. It's got the rear touchpad in there, because, you know, Luminous is...
Just be glad it wasn't entirely touch-controlled, that you're not, like, sliding the blocks along.
That's the thing. You can't... Well, you
oh,
can
no.
actually...
Don't
no,
say
wait,
that.
Listen, you can... Oh. If you wanted to, you can touch the blocks to rotate them.
Don't.
And it works fine, but it's not... If you
but
actually
want
to... If you actually want to play for score and you're not just, like, screwing around, then you will never use that. Another thing is that when you activate the little avatar power, you touch the avatar on the screen. But he's in the, like I said, he's in the lower left corner, and you actually touch the front screen for that, and it takes like a second. That's no big deal. That works fine.
All right.
But yeah, but like the rear touchpad stuff, for this game, just it feels weird. They should have put it on a button if they're gonna have it at all. But
yeah.
Aside from that, really great version of Luminous, probably the best yet, and everyone should buy it because it's Luminous.
Yeah, and you're good.
One trend I've noticed is a lot of games, they will implement the touch controls, and then they will leave an option to use buttons only, which is a welcome change from new platforms that force their gimmick on you at every opportunity.
Yeah, that's true. Though usually you find that when the touch controls weren't very good to begin with. Basically, if you have touch controls, your game should be designed to work in a way that does not work with buttons. And if you're using touch controls to replace button actions, that's dumb.
Yep.
Okay. We're in agreement on that.
Okay. I think we all are.
Okay. Let's just keep going around and talk about one game that we liked. Jeff, what do you like on your Vita? You've had yours a little longer than the rest of us because you took advantage of the Canadian first edition bundle, free from the shackles of AT&T.
So 3G on my Vita.
Yeah. All right. So, like, what is your favorite experience so far on the Vita?
Honestly, Rayman Origins.
Okay.
Even though I already own it on 360.
Right. It's Rayman Origins.
Yeah.
We're going to have this conversation. Right? You like Rayman Origins.
A bit,
so
yes.
Get this Rayman Origins. Now I'm saying you do. Everyone, you like Rayman Origins and you like Luminous. So this system has those and you like those. So there we go.
The strangest thing is getting a system at launch and actually having games.
Yeah. And, you know, that is nice. I do think that we're getting a lot of ports on this system, which I think that's going to be what it is. is that we're going to have a lot of, you know, basically PS3 versions of games also in the Vita, which is fine. And, you know, I guess I don't mind that so much, but it's weird to see this lineup that has very few designed for the system games, especially since this system has so many strange inputs and weird setups and things like that, where it really could do some interesting things.
I was really hoping for a Gravity Rush at launch.
Yeah, and that keeps getting pushed back to, what is it now? June?
June.
And Jerry, I know you were looking forward to Gravity Rush. And up until, like, what, a week and a half before launch, you were going to hold off until Gravity Rush came out?
Yep.
How do you feel about it now that it's going to be a lot longer?
Painful, but what can I do?
You are fine messing with your menu transparent images until June.
I already discovered that I like Uncharted Golden Abyss more than any of the console Uncharted. So
you want to talk about that one, because that is interesting, because I don't think we have the same thing to say that we did with Luminous and Rayman Origins, and that those games are great. You like them and let's play them again. Golden Abyss seems more like the original Uncharted than 2 and 3, and I guess it has to be, because it's, you know, it has to have the kind of scale that will fit on that screen. But what are your thoughts on Golden Abyss? What makes it more accessible and enjoyable?
I mean, you pretty much just said it, that it's more like Uncharted 1 than the others, and I'm in the very minor camp that actually liked that Uncharted better than the others.
Okay. But from what I've seen, it focuses a lot more on kind of the maneuvering, climbing, getting around kind of stuff than the shooting in this segment. That it's more of, you know, an exploring thing than a shooting and telling a story thing. Is that?
Yep. I mean, I think I mentioned before when talking about Mass Effect that my favorite chapter in Mass Effect is the chapter where you actually don't do any sort of combat. And same concept for Golden Abyss. It actually has chapters where there is no combat at all. Just exploration, running around, character exposition. Stuff happens that actually does not involve gunplay. And I like that.
As much as they've improved the gunplay in the recent games, it is still not the strong point of those games. I think we can agree that, you know, that I could see that levels without that could be really interesting.
That and I mean, you mentioned that you could go without using tilt in any Vita games, but I really really like the motion controls for Uncharted for Golden Abyss.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. So I know a lot about the touch controls in the game, where you kind of slide around and things like that. What are the motion controls in this game?
Yeah, I could do with less of the actual touch controls, because it's neat, but not do the. I mean, you get to do like some charcoal rubbings, and it's neat, but not do over the course of the whole game. Neat,
right? Yeah. So how do the motion controls work, and you know, in what situations do you use this?
Pretty much, you can use you can tilt the Vita to slightly adjust your aim when you're in the middle of a shot with any weapon. And it really, really took a bit of getting used to, because at first I was pretty much fighting with the controls, like, no game, I want to do this, please let me do that. But
yeah,
once I stopped actually fighting with the controls and simply added them and started using them with my regular gameplay, I have not played a third-person shooter where I got more headshots than Golden Abyss.
Hmm. Well, that is interesting, that if they work in conjunction with buttons, I think that's one thing that we haven't seen as much of, that people, like, can move around and use the buttons.
Yeah, with the tilt controls, I pretty much did the majority of the major wide swingings you do with aiming with the actual controls, but then when it came to actually, like, oh, I'm off by a little bit, and rather than hitting the stick to, you know, maybe mess up the shot, I slightly moved the Vita itself, and there you go, I have a perfect headshot.
Hmm. That is an interesting way to do it, kind of just as a refined control. I think a lot of the problem with motion controls is they want you to be like flail around, but if it is kind of like, all right, I can move this slightly and it, you know, it doesn't do much, but it does, you know, let you do finer control than the stick allows you to. And that's interesting. Mm-hmm. All right. So, yeah.
Also, touch on the rear touchpad. I do think that there is something that can be done with it, but it has to be on the level of Escape Plan, which I also picked up at launch.
Yeah, so Escape Plan, I have heard that it tries things, and it succeeds at some of them.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on Escape Plan?
It's kind of hit or miss. I do like the concept of Escape Plan, since it's kind of like a room-based puzzle game. Like, you're constantly being thrown into this new gauntlet of this room that has puzzles to solve.
Yeah.
And it does do some neat things with the rear touchpad that some of which actually catch me by surprise every time.
Hmm.
In the sense that you have to get experimental with the rear touchpad and like pressing it to create sounds in the background to lure away guards, tapping the rear touchpad to knock down some front panels.
Ah, well, and that's interesting.
It actually uses the touchpad in a more creative way than some of the other games I play that use it. Like, but the main thing with it is that you are not. I mean, it's a puzzle game, so you have to take your time with it, which is which is different from a lot of other games that want you to use the touchpad in conjunction with the regular game.
Right. Well, I definitely think that can maybe work better. I think one of the problems with the rear touchpad is keeping track of where your finger is in relation to things. That it maybe if you have the time to easily tell, then maybe that works. But definitely when games use absolute positioning where like you have to hit this part of the screen, then that's a lot tougher than say use the rear touchpad and like drag in this direction or drag in any relative controls. It's a lot easier to use.
I have another good example of rear touchpad use.
Okay.
We should have a new category actually for the Game of the Year Awards, best rear touchpad use.
Okay.
Because we already have two contenders, clearly. But actually, my probably the biggest surprise for me was Touch My Katamari, which is a game that I've heard not many great things about, but I decided, hey, I'm just going to pick this up anyway because I like Katamari. And I want something else to play on the Vita that isn't Luminous.
Right.
And don't get me wrong, I love Luminous, but sometimes you can use a little break for Luminous. So
keep going, but no.
Okay. Maybe you're right, but Katamari, yes.
Sure.
It's the thing about Katamari, the new thing about this Katamari is the fact that you can both stretch and squish the Katamari so it becomes wider or taller.
Right.
And you can do that with either the front touchscreen or the rear touchpad. And believe it or not, while you're actually playing that game, you can use the rear touchpad just fine while you're rolling the Katamari. And
yeah, I can see that.
And it works. See, that's an example of how to use it right. I mean, you could still use the touchscreen, but every instance I found of trying to do that, I had to actually try to stop rolling and stretch it. But with the rear touchpad, most of the time I've been able to just like just stretch the Katamari or push my fingers together while rolling to make it taller and pick up other objects that I couldn't get otherwise. And it works surprisingly well.
But so like those are relative measures. It's just like move your fingers together. You don't have to move them exactly on the spot where the Katamari is or anything, right?
No.
That could work.
Yeah, it works. Yeah. It works just fine. I think that's great. I think stuff like that is how the rear touchpad could be used. It's just a shame we don't see much of it. But that game is pleasantly surprising to me because I've been kind of getting tired of the Katamari series. I think the last two big releases were the 360 and the PS3 versions of with Beautiful Katamari and then Katamari Forever, and both were good, but I don't know, they felt like they were lacking something. And this is the first Katamari game in a while that I felt actually has a ton of new original stuff, I think the touch control stuff, the stretching and the squeezing of the Katamari is surprisingly strategic in terms of when you use it.
It adds a mechanic to a game that hasn't had a new mechanic ever
since the original game. So it's really well done, and it's super short. That's the one thing. It's I'm not sure. Some people might not be happy with $30 price. Again, that's cheaper than most Vita launch games.
Right.
I don't know if it's available for download for even cheaper. I know it's available for download. I don't know
it's
out of
25 for download.
Yeah.
Okay, that's even better. So I would recommend this is a good game that you're gonna play like one or two levels of and then put away for a little while and then come back to every once in a while. Like I rushed through it fairly quickly and it took me maybe 3 to 4 hours. But it's like all the levels are really well done. There are a couple that are not so great, but they're not very long levels, and you know you get through them pretty quickly, and you'll get back to the really good stuff. And I don't know, it's color me surprised because I was not expecting to like this game nearly as much as I have, but I'm really impressed with this.
Yeah, you know, generally I think that with the whole of the Vita's lineup, there are games that are pleasantly surprising how good they are, and they may not be your favorite games of all time, but there aren't a whole lot of stinkers in this lineup. There are ones that are good, and there are ones that are all right, maybe not worth it, but you know, not unpleasant.
Like,
yeah, I already mentioned that I was surprised that Golden Abyss ended up being my favorite in the series. Like, yeah. And I was ready to dismiss Golden Abyss at first, like, not even consider getting it.
Right. It seems like one of those, you know, like all of those PSP versions of the console games where they just handed it off to someone random, and they made a game with the license, and no one really cares. And yeah, but it seems like it's a solid version of that game, which is great.
Once again, it helps that there are two analog sticks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really helps. But
I can see that really helping with Katamari, especially.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
That is the way to play that game.
I'm one of the few unfortunate people who play the PSP one, and that was horrible.
Me and my Katamari.
That was an experience, all right.
All right. Unless you guys have anything else you want to talk about, I think we can go ahead and wrap this one up.
I do have one comment.
Huh?
I do have one last comment.
Okay.
I want more platformers on this thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I was gonna mention Tales from Space. Pretty good game.
Ah, right. Yeah, there's some really interesting downloadables. And Jerry, you talked about Escape Plan, but Tales from Space: Mutant Blobs Attack sounds like it was pretty great and better than the PS3 game.
Oh yeah, I didn't want to interrupt Jerry that much. I just wanted to mention it's like that is a cool downloadable game you can get for like $8. Pretty short, but. You know, generally really fun. Bad example of how to use tilt controls, but great example of how to do puzzle platformers that use the touchscreen and the buttons.
Great example of how not to use tilt controls.
Yeah, but the tilt levels in it are optional. Yeah. There's only one point where you actually have to use it, and it's pretty easy.
Yeah, that's pretty easy, but like there are separate sections that are terrible with the tilt controls, and they're just awful. But yeah, anyway, go ahead, Jerry. I'm sorry.
basically, like, I mean, throughout the entirety of the cast, I've been playing Rayman Origins, and I'm convinced this thing, I want more platformers on it.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm trying to think, oh gosh, I was going to say I don't know of any platformers that have been announced for this system that are on the way, but then again, I don't know many games that have been announced for the system that are on the way. We basically had the launch lineup. We have a couple of games trickling out in the next few weeks, Unit 13, MLB The Show, we got Little Big Planet, we do have Gravity Rush in June.
Well, we have...
And then, I don't know what's coming up for the system.
We'll know
more remakes.
We'll know in the 9th because Sony is doing a stream to announce any unannounced upcoming Vita games.
I think it's just going to be a stream to announce more PSN downtime.
Sure.
Yes.
Yep.
The stream is not available due to scheduled maintenance.
Yep.
There's like I said, by the time once Gravity Rush comes out, that'll be right after E3. So hopefully, right afterwards, we'll have other stuff to look forward to that's maybe going to be recently announced either on the stream or during E3. But I was going to say, Graham, I'm surprised you don't want to talk about Hot Shots at all.
Oh, sure, I can talk about Hot Shots. It's Hot Shots.
It is Hot Shots.
A lot of us got Hot Shots, and it's pretty good. It's Hot Shots. You know, it's one of those things where I don't have much else to say about it. They changed the aesthetic a little bit. I think they wanted to put a little more detail in the game, and they didn't make it super realistic, but they did make the characters a little less chibi and a little more, you know, regular sized people. The characters are still super, super stereotypical and a bit offensive. that's Hi, always I'm a little.
I'm a caddy.
Do you that's need a caddy?
The, that's not the
I'm
voice.
I'm a caddy.
But that's
I'm Marta. Line. By the way, like they really needed to earlier in that game give you the opportunity to unlock another caddy and pay for it.
But I still haven't unlocked another caddy. Although yeah, I'm probably not as far as you are. I don't know.
There are hours in that game. But yeah, that the caddy is not great. But the caddies have never been that great. Just now, there's just a bit more space for them to put more dialogue in there, but they didn't put enough more dialogue to make it not annoying. Just they just talk more often with the same stuff.
Graham, yeah. Do you need a caddy? Do you need a caddy?
That depends.
I'm a caddy.
Okay, but wait.
Okay. I'm See, a caddy.
That's gonna be confusing, though.
Do you need a caddy?
I need a caddy, but I mean.
Hi, I'm Marta.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'll just stop now.
No, it's.
But as someone who hasn't played a Hot Shots game since the PS1, I basically never played any of Clap Hands.
Really? So you played the first Hot Shots because they took over with the second one.
Yes, I take that back. I might have played a demo of the second game.
Okay.
But the first Hot Shots is pretty much all the experience I had.
Yeah.
Don't know why I stopped. I just kind of did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Hot Shots is pretty good. It's you know what to expect, and this is another one of those.
And I
they have like, added a lot of different like schemes for you know for swinging the club and impact and stuff. I personally don't see a lot of difference in them. There are slight differences, but I'm not sure why they decided to. Oh, instead of coming back down the meter, now it's a circle. Okay,
yeah.
Great. But it's a good game. The online, I think, Andrew, we can talk a little bit about that. They dropped the ball a bit on that. They have online lobbies where you have a little like shiny like chibi avatar that you dress up that has nothing to do with the person that you've picked or anything related to golfing.
I love that, by the way. I just want to mention the lobbies themselves are great.
Yeah, I mean they're totally dumb, but it's just like let's wander around this room and then there's a spot where you can wander behind this picture frame and stick your head out like you're in the picture. Like what is I thought this was a golf game.
But that's the bad thing. You'll be spending a lot of time in those lobbies. Because
you can only join scheduled tournaments that happen every 15 minutes. They fill up. You can't just join your friends. You have to, you know, in advance, agree that you're going to be in this tournament and then get in this tournament. And then you get in there and then you play a hole and then you wait for everyone to finish. And then you play a hole and you wait for everyone to finish. And that's the game.
It's not bad, but it's not what I wanted.
Right. And I think there are a lot of these ideas in the launch that make me think that well into the game's development, they thought you'd be doing some play over 3G so that you could play and then like transmit a little bit of data back to the system, you know, so it isn't like totally interactive going all the way through, that there's a lot of this that's just, oh, okay, here's my score. And then sit in a lobby for a second. And then here's my score, which would be great if you just try and use a little bit of data over 3G network, but then you can't play like that. So it's a little weird with the Wi-Fi connection to not be interacting with other players very much at all and not be able to match with your friends. Though there have been rumblings that that is going to be patched in later. I can't say. And I wish it was there at the beginning. And it's weird that this game has an online pass because this online is not like a thing that I would pay money for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not having the online isn't exactly much of a deterrent against buying used.
Yeah.
Although this seems like a perfect game to get, along with Luminous, seems like a perfect game to download and have on your system at all times in case you think, I want to play a little golf and then I want to play a little Luminous.
Right.
And then I want to keep playing Luminous.
Okay.
And then keep playing Luminous. And yeah.
Yep. All right. Let's go ahead and wrap this one up. But for all of us here, I'm Graham. See you guys in 2 weeks when we will be talking about Mass Effect 3 and probably nothing else because it's Mass Effect 3, guys. Seriously.
Shepard.
Thanks for listening to the Snack Bar Games podcast. Follow us on the web at snackbar-games.com or on Twitter at snackbargames.